Welcome to Mojo for the Modern Man. This is your host, Ken Mossman. And today I am thrilled to be joined for the second half of my conversation with Howie James Oma. And you'll hear me, I just want to let you know, and I mentioned this later on, that I refer to Howie as Howie because that's, he gave us permission to call him, and he refers to himself as James. So you'll hear those names interchangeably. You're going to hear some really good stuff about the work that Howie does in the world, and we're also going to reflect back on those 8 days spent at the police station. And what else are listeners going to hear, Howie?
Like having a public persona and having a private one. Publicly, pointing boys to their treasure. Privately, pointing myself to my troubles.
And who has never done that before? Well, we all do it. So there's a lot. This is a very rich conversation. And I encourage you, if you have not yet, to go back and listen to Act One, because that sets a lot of the context for what we cover here in Act Two. And with that, let's go ahead and take the plunge into this rich conversation between Howie and myself. Enjoy. Howie James Oma, it is a pleasure to have you back for the second half of this conversation, our second act. So when we wrapped up the first act, you were, you know, of course, you shared some great wisdom about turning from lack to treasure. And then between these two acts, we were, you were joking around that you're sure you're happy to share that another piece of the story that was missing from the first act, and you made the comment, "Well, that's okay, I'm a jailbird." So let's start here. What was it that you were arrested for that had you end up in that police station for 8 days?
Yeah, so I was staying with a friend. I was staying with a friend who, despite being very talented, he was also involved in crime. And so my only crime was that I could not afford to to pay house rent, and that's why I was staying with him. So my dreams were to become a writer. So for me, even at the point where I was getting arrested, I was like, my only crime is I can't afford to pay rent. That's why I'm staying with him. Yeah. But then again, now I think for me, looking back, I think getting arrested was a very good thing, because it enabled me to look at the things that I had in my hands differently. Yeah. It made me look at now, like, what treasure do I have? And so now, instead of now focusing on the trouble that I'd been having for the last 13 years, I started now looking at what do I have? And I actually even thought about my, like what will be written on my tombstone if I were to die. Then, like, they will just say, he was born, he lived, he died. So for me, getting arrested, like, was one of the best things to happen to me, because now, had it not happened, I would have not looked at what I had in my hand. Because I think in life we need someone who can just say, you are good at this. You are good at maybe washing a car. You are good at painting a car. You are good at maybe even singing. And so that one thing can like completely change your life and even shift your life. So I think for me, that is what was beautiful about getting arrested.
I'm curious, what was it that if you could describe the moment, or what came to you, or what was it that had you make that, here you are sitting in this police station, what was it that had that really had you make that shift?
So getting arrested is not like a very beautiful thing. I don't know about the US, but getting arrested in Kenya is not like a very beautiful thing. And so for me, I'd actually taken tea to this friend of mine in the morning, because he was arrested at the day before. So I went to see him, and then just take tea to him, and then I'll find out, by the way, why were you arrested? Like, what's happening? What's going on? And then now, the police officer would come to arrest him. Then just said, we're also going to arrest you as well.
So here you are. You're actually in the police station giving your friend tea.
Yeah.
And the police officer says, oh, by the way, we're going to arrest you too.
Yeah. We are going to arrest you too. and then he said that we are going to arrest you so that now we can, okay, like we can now investigate and find out whether or not you're also involved in crime. So there I was just thinking about my life, just reflecting, and then thinking, oh, like if nothing is going to happen, then now I'm not going to get out of this. I'm not going to get out of this situation very easily. Yeah. So I was very bitter. I was angry also, and I was also very confused at the same time. And so that police station, it had like, okay, so it had like, so the morning I arrived, my friend was taken to a different police station. Yeah, so I arrived, and then the next day in the morning, I was just bitter. So it had two rooms. No, it had three rooms. So one of them, okay, was the toilet at the very end. Then there's another one in the middle. Then there's another one now just close to the door. And so for me, I just went into the middle one, and I was just seated there, just thinking about my life, reflecting about my life, and thinking about like I did not grow up with a father. That's why I'm even here. If I would have grown up with a father, maybe my life would have ended up differently. And then this guy just walks in, and this guy says, you look like you've grown up with a father.
So he just looked at you and said, you look like you've grown up with a father. I mean, I didn't ask you about this in Act One. He just thought you looked like you grew up with a father. Keep going.
He just said, it looks like I've my life cut out, like I have plans for my life. And this is because I've grown up with a father, which he didn't grow up with. Very strange.
And so again, what was it about him saying, "Oh, you look like you've grown up with a father"? Because then, while you're sitting there, you know, bitterly running these ideas through your mind, what was it that had this shift happen?
I don't know why. But now that I go to prison a lot. There's a way where you can tell that someone has been to prison like a multiple of times. Someone is used to getting arrested. Then you can tell that this person, they're not used to getting arrested. They're not troublesome. Yeah, like they're not troublesome. When you look at them, you can just say this one is very innocent. Yeah.
So you've talked, you've shared with me, and you've shared with a bunch of other men that you and I know, and that we've had you in to speak as well. Because now we're starting to get into the realm of the work you do now, and I think it's really useful from a cultural standpoint to share a bit about what happens when a young man, a teen, even a child, you know, a young boy gets into some sort of trouble, that ends up, you know, getting him into the Kenyan legal and penal system.
Yeah, so I would just like to point out that these eight days really affected me a lot, especially after I'd left. After now I was told we are free to go back home, because now one of the things that I was doing was that now I was a volunteer at a place that had a library whereby now school children will come there, and then now part of my role was now to just help these school children to do homework and complete their homework.
And this is before you were arrested.
Yes.
Okay, keep going.
Yeah, and then now when I got out and I was now free, just after 8 days, like I lost everything. I remember like just going to one parent after the other, just telling them that, can you please allow your children to come back? Yeah, but then again, I think in their eyes, I was this bad guy, like I was this jailbird, like someone who had been arrested. So there's a lot of stigma. There's a lot of stigma in now after once you've been arrested, it doesn't matter whether you are guilty or innocent. Like you're just presumed to be a very bad person. So for me also, I see this a lot. I see this a lot whereby now both even boys and girls and even women and men who have been arrested, and then now the community now looks at them as someone who is guilty, like you're guilty. Like no one wants to give you a chance.
This is really important. So I want to underline this. Just because of the fact that you've been arrested, whether you're actually guilty or not, whether that man, that woman, that teenager, that kid, whether or not they are in fact proven guilty or otherwise, the community now views them as broken, as bad.
Yeah. Just the way it also happened to me. Okay, now just imagine 8 days in a police station, and then now landing now in an actual prison. Yeah, so that's now like a different level. And so there's a lot of stigma that surrounds getting arrested and going to prison. Yeah. Yeah, so because our prisons are largely to punish as opposed to rectify or even rehabilitate. Even though now, these days, it is a bit different. But then again, now, the way the community now views someone who has been arrested, they look at you differently. Yeah.
And your experience of that, you went back to the library where you previously, before getting arrested, you were able to work with the kids around reading, et cetera. And the response from them when you came back after leaving the police station was they just didn't want you anymore.
Yeah, yes. Especially the parents, because now you're a bad apple. I think for me, the most hurting thing was,
I just want to point out, you said, you're a bad apple and you laughed about it. You laughed about it now. I take it then you weren't laughing.
No, I was not laughing. I was not laughing. Like it was very painful. It was very, as in no one, no one wants to find out, by the way, James, why were you arrested? What happened? And then also, why were you let go? Like, why were you freed? I think nobody wanted to know. Nobody asked me about these questions. But then again, now there are just these whispers that you are hearing behind your back. Like you just notice when you walk in, people are quiet all of a sudden. Then when you walk out, they started also talking all of a sudden. Yeah, so it's very. There's a lot of stigma. That's all I can say. So you can imagine if there's a teenager who has been wrongfully arrested for a crime that they didn't commit, or even just a very petty crime, and then now they go to prison for this, and then for the rest of their lives, they're a jailbird. Yeah. So what makes me different from that kind of a jailbird is that I choose to go to prison every week for our program. But these are the jailbird, they get arrested. So. So that's the only difference. But back then it was very hard because you can't leave, you don't have someone visiting you, and then you are just being told, unless you confess, unless you confess, we're going to do things to you that will make you like say you did this or you're involved in crime. And so those are the things that I will be told. Like once in a while, I'll just be called, James, come. Then I go for the interview. Like, are you okay? Like, are you tell us, are you involved in crime? Then I say, no, I am not. My only crime is I can't afford to pay rent. That's my only crime. Yeah. So I just kept on saying that's my crime. That's my only crime. So I'm not involved in any gang activity or in anything. I'm actually involved in this place as a volunteer who teaches these children reading and writing. Yeah. So imagine it took 8 days. It took 8 days for them to find out that I'm really not involved. So there was a young man. There was a young man who was one of the police informers. And so he was the one who, they kept on asking about me. And then he said that I'm not involved. And so that's why I got freed after 8 days. But that was 8 days is too long. 8 days is too long for someone to get arrested, only to then again now to be told you are free. And then you lose like a lot of things. You lose your friends, you lose the things that you used to do. Now you can't do them freely. Yeah, just because you've been arrested.
So 8 days it took 8 days for the one who was the informant to finally say no. James wasn't that he wasn't involved. He's not your guy. So what you heard as you're listening here, you heard how we say. That now he goes back to prison every week. And so he's giving us a little bit of a preview of the work that you do. So, yeah. So before we go there completely, Howie does work in Kenyan prisons. And we're going to hear about that in just a minute, but take us to, What actually led you to start doing this work and the creation of Lifelong Kenya?
So one of my goals when I was at the police station was that I'll leave and then I'll go and apply for a job as a TV producer slash journalist. So after I left, I didn't apply immediately. I didn't apply for a job immediately. But eventually after I did, that was now 3 years later. So I applied for this job and I got it. And so this job, I got it as a TV producer and I was working mainly with children. And so I noticed that boys, especially boys, I just saw, like boys who looked like me, they sounded like me. Boys were just focusing more on their troubles than their treasures. And so now compared to the girls knew what they wanted to be. They knew who their role model was. They knew what they like. The boys were just there. They just will focus more on their troubles. And so now, I got this job in 2008. And so in 2012, in July, there's a colleague of mine who told me about boys, at a juvenile prison. So when I went to see these boys, And I just saw like there were 100 boys. So when I looked at each and every one of them, I just saw myself. I saw myself at their age when I needed when I needed someone to listen to me.
And how old were these boys?
They were between 17, 18 to 21.
Okay. 17 yes. to 21. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I looked at them, I just saw a reflection of myself when I was their age and I needed like a father figure, an adult man who can just say, oh, James, tell me about your story instead of just writing you off like you are a thief, you are a murderer, you are a rapist, you are this and that. Like instead of them just connecting you to the crime that you've committed, then they can listen to your story, like tell me about your story. And so for me, that is what I saw in these boys. And so I started now going to prison every Friday, which was my off day. So I will go visit these boys, talk to them, find out who has been visited, find out who is going to court next, or who was in court. Yeah, and then I just get to really understand who these boys were behind the mask that is behind the crime. Like, who are these boys? Yeah, and so that now started now birthing now, like, let's say more of like, let's say life. Okay, life is life song. Okay, like life song. So I will go there. Then now, some other days, I will also call and visit their parents. And then now I started now discovering a lot of things that were reminding me of how I grew up, and also blaming my mother, and also blaming my circumstances. Yeah. And so actually by then I just said, you know what, James, like that father figure that you are looking for, now you can become this father figure to these boys. At first I was very afraid and actually tried running away from this. I was like, these boys are looking for the same thing that I grew up looking for, which was a father figure. And I said, I thought, because I did not grow up with a father, then now I'm not the right guy. I'm not the right guy. But then again, now I kept on also remembering that at this police station, like 3 years back, there was someone who said, I grew up, like I looked like I'd grown up with a father. And so for me, there was nowhere else for me to run to except now just embrace this responsibility and these boys.
So you were, I just want to reflect, because I've got this image in my head now. First of all, I want to let listeners know also that Howie and I have known each other for a while, and he has given me permission to call him either Howie or James, and I'm in the habit of calling him Howie, and he refers to himself as James. So I'm not going to transition in the middle of this, unless I do. We're talking about the same person. But I just have this image in my head. Again, back to the 8 days in the police station, sitting in that middle room, where here you are at the tender age of 29, and these other guys who it's not their first time in the police station, are now looking to you, as a father figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
and I love that what I'm really taken by in your story, and I think this is really common. I've seen it in myself. Looking at my own history, and there's biblical stories about this. I mean, it's everywhere. I think it's probably something of this in every culture. The calling, if you will. I'm using that language intentionally. You know, we get a calling and we do our best to run away from it, but it just but it just keeps coming.
Yes.
Keep going. It's a beautiful story.
I was actually subtracting. I was doing the math, and then now I've seen that I was 36 years old when I first went to prison to like meet these boys. I was 36 years old, and one of the strangest things is that now I'd spent like 36 minus 13 just mourning about that. I didn't have this. I've never gone to college. If I had done that, I would have had, like, let's say a degree in journalism, and yet I had that one thing that if I would have focused on it. Yeah, but then again, now it's very funny with a calling, because now every month that I will go to every prison program, I will just go and tell them, you know what, I've just met these boys, and because you've been running these prison programs, can you kindly adopt this program? Then they're like, no, that is your calling. I'm like, no, what is a calling? Because I was just confused. I'm like, what's a calling? I'm like, no, like, this is not my calling. Furthermore, they're looking for the same thing that I didn't grow up with, so it's not a calling. Because for me, I thought that a calling is something that you have to be prepared for. You have to be like You have to be very adequate. Like, you have to be very adequate. Like, you've been prepared, you've been trained for it. Yeah, because then I'm like, no, I'm the wrong guy. If this is my calling, then I'm the wrong guy because I didn't grow up with a father. And these guys are looking for a father. But anyway, so after I'd met these boys, 2013, just a few months, one of my bosses calls me for a meeting. And then I'm like, oh, like, I'm going to get a raise. And then what she tells me is, I've realized that you're going to prison. You've been going to prison, of course, during your off day. But then again, now I would like to give you a choice. Choose between the boys, the prison program, and your work here.
And let me get this straight. You were doing the prison work on your off time.
Yeah. Yes.
Because they were aware that you were going to, quote unquote, going into prisons every Friday, that yeah. you were offered an ultimatum: either the job or the thing, you know, the prison thing.
Yeah, this calling thing is just confusing. It's just confusing because actually for me. After I started now going to prison every Friday during my off day, I was actually now working very, very hard.
Yeah.
Just making sure that by Friday, I've done everything and I'm now free to go to prison, right? And then all of a sudden, there's this meeting where I'm actually told that, by the way, the thing that you are trying to solve, this thing has always been there. So then I'm like, okay. Then I said, I'm choosing the boys. And so this boss of mine thought, okay. And then she said, if they're paying you more, then it's okay. Then I said, actually, they're not even paying me. I'm doing this free of charge. And so, 2013, I quit my job now to fully now focus now on prison work. just prison work. And then now I didn't have now like money to pay rent. So now started staying with one friend after the other. And so I just kept on now developing the program. And one thing led to the other, one thing led to the other. So by the time I'm meeting my wife, I have nothing that I can call my own. I don't even have money. I don't even have clothes. I was actually calling myself back then like the one trouser man. Yeah, because I just had one trouser. And so
one trouser man.
And so, yeah, and so I think she just asked me like, okay, so how are you going to take care of us? If I get married to you, how are you going to take care of us? And I just told her, that for me, what I know, my destiny is tied up with the boys. So the more I try to help the boys get out of prison, the more I find fulfillment. So that's what I told her. Then also I had this
vision board.
I had this vision board. And so I just told her that I have a vision, and so but I have to also do this. Yeah, absolutely. And she was she was very gracious enough to just say yes. And after getting married in 2015 October, I started now getting into marriage and still going to prison and coming back home. So in 2016, I wanted to quit LifeSong. Actually, I said, you know what? I'm quitting LifeSong simply because my wife was taking care of everything, including my haircut. Because now for me, I go to the barber shop once or twice every week. And so for me, I was like, what kind of a husband am I that cannot even take care of his own haircut?
Mm.
And so I just told my wife, you know what? I am quitting. The good thing is she didn't tell me, she just kept quiet. And because she didn't say anything, I started was like, why didn't she say anything? And then I was like, let me start running. So I started running. I started running in the morning. I started cycling, even in the rain, just to run away from this calling, because I was like, no, like, let me find a reason why I should run away from this calling.
Yeah.
And the more I kept running away from it, the more I realized, I was actually qualified to work with these boys, because I understand what it means to lack a father figure. I understand what it means to live with stigma. I understand what it means to live with rejection. I also understand also what it means to find treasure within your troubles. So I was like, you know what? I can't run anymore. I can't run anymore. And so I decided, instead of me running away from this, what about now finding how now I can meet the needs of the boys? And so I discovered that I needed now to have like a halfway house. I also need to like create jobs for the boys, and also create a very safe space for the boys, whereby now, of course, you can be rebuked, but in love. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Like so
you
this
be,
now
be rebu-
this
now I want to repeat what you just
changed.
Because I think what you just said there is a gem. You can be rebuked, but with love.
Yes, with the love. Yeah, with the love. With the love, which I was not getting when I was growing up. I was not getting, because now it's just rebuke. Yeah, but not with love. And so, yeah. So for me now, after deciding that now I am embracing this now fully, and I'm going to do this full time. Of course, every year that I spend doing like at Lifesong, something new comes up. Even this year, I'm focusing on something else. So you find that now in 2016, the whole of it, I was not going to prison. I was just running, crying, praying, and doing all these things. Then now 2017, now I went back. 2017, now I went back, and then I've started now going to prison now the whole week, instead of now one day, now the whole week, from Monday to Friday. And this also opened like a lot of it made me now like, let's say, now just discover like who are these boys, and what are their needs. And then now once I connect with the boys, now look for their mothers and also look for their fathers. And then now just get to tell their fathers, by the way, this boy just needs you. Like, yeah, he just needs you. He just needs you to just listen. Don't say anything. Just listen. Reach out to where he is and go to prison, visit him. Yeah. And then now in 2018, we started now cycling. Started cycling to have a halfway house. So every year we cycle just to have a halfway house. And the most funniest thing also is that now, during this cycling, because of the stigma that's attached to our work, nobody wants to support us. They're like, oh, you're doing a very good thing, but I cannot support because those guys have done bad things that they need to stay there. They need to stay where they are at.
So this is fascinating to me that people are telling you you're doing a really great thing. But the boys that you're helping need to stay where they are because they did bad things.
So we can't support. I mean, even on Facebook, like I see people who will comment, you're doing a really nice thing, but I cannot support criminals. And so it's like now even going to prison for me is like it attracts stigma. And so for me, after a while, you know, I said, okay, so whenever someone asks me, what do you do for a living? I say, I break boys out of prison. And if they ask, tell me about it, then I'll tell them about it. But if they don't say anything, I just say, you know what? I don't want to waste their time. Then I'll just ask, so Ken, what about you? What do you do? Then now I just focus on you. I just listen to you, ask questions. And then when the time to say goodbye comes, then I say, oh, bye, Ken. It was nice knowing you and hearing about your story. You know what, so in I think it was 2020 no um I think two years About 3 years ago, I got to learn about CTI. So I got to learn about CTI. So I started like posting on Facebook, looking for a scholarship, like to study life coaching. And so there was this lady, her name is Carol McLean. So Carol McLean was able to connect me to CTI, and I got the full scholarship. And so I remember okay, like during this peer coaching, okay, like sessions, and then I'll just share like, I'm a mess, I'm a mess. I've been trying to do this thing for the past 9 years. I've been trying to help boys in Kenya come out of prison. I don't get any support, so it's like I've wasted all these 9 years of my time. And then these guys are like, no, you're doing like a very wonderful thing. This is a wonderful work you are trying to do. So you have your leader within. I'm like, my leader within? What do you mean I have my leader within? Because for me, even though I've been trying to teach the boys about finding treasure within their trouble, but now privately, I'm a mess. Publicly, I'm like, there's treasure within your troubles. But privately, I'm like, ah, no, James, you're a mess. Because I spent like a lot of time in prison, but I am broke. I don't even have money. By the way, I'm usually very broke. I can't lie to you. My wife takes care of a lot of things and she covers me. But then again, I'm like, oh my goodness me. Like, whatever I'm doing, if I transfer it now to a job, I'll be earning like some income. So privately, I'm just like a complete mess. So why not for CTI? I would have not, like, let's say now, discovered a lot of other things. I would have not discovered that, by the way, I have the leader within. I have the purpose. Like, I've been doing like a very good thing. So because of CTI and even this training, I was able to now gather enough courage to now start, okay, like now to start now this halfway house. Because between 2018 up to 2021, I was just talking about it, like, you know what? One day when we have like enough money, we'll start renting this halfway house. Yeah. But now because of now, okay, these coaching practices, I was able to just get enough courage to now start this halfway house. Also, the halfway house also opened other things that, okay, that yeah. So one of the things was that now, because of the halfway house, I started discovering that there are boys that we had not factored in. When we were starting this halfway house, it was for boys coming out of prison. But after now starting renting it, I discovered that there were boys who maybe they've been sexually abused in the community and they need a safe house. The other group also are boys who have been neglected or they're going to court and they need a safe space to go to. The other one also, they've not been engaged in crime. They're just looking for a safe space. They're looking for whereby, okay, like where they're going to find someone who's going to say to them, you have a gift in you. I can see you have a gift in you. So just focus on developing this gift instead of feeding your trouble. So that halfway house now started now becoming something different,
And
which is
well, I'm curious how generally speaking, how long to when the boys come to the halfway house, how if there's an average, how what's the average time that they spend before moving on?
so ideally they should spend okay, like 3 months. But then again, now I've come to discover that now they need at least 6 months. Yeah. So 3 months is very minimum, because now after this boy has been focusing so much on their trouble, and then all of a sudden they come to a place whereby now they're being told feed more, feed the treasure more. Then it's like you get confused. Like, I've been focusing on trouble. Then here I am with this man who is saying, feed your treasure. And then your treasure is also within your trouble. So it's like now, oh, you need more time. You need more time now to, like, even for me, I was actually doing the math and I discovered that now, after, so I spent like, okay, like after now starting to discover myself, it's like now I went back to school for so many, many, many years. Yeah, in order for me now to be fully aware that this is the treasure that I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now, as I mentioned, earlier on, like even though I was going to prison, talking to these boys about finding their treasure within their trouble. But then again, now privately, privately, I'm just a complete mess. Like I'm like feeling like I have nothing to offer to the world. I have nothing. Yeah. So for me, I think ideally it's 3 to 6 months. That's the time that this we need with these boys.
Yeah. So
yeah.
So thank you for your transparency and vulnerability on this on this topic, because I think, you know, what you're doing a beautiful job of is being completely real about two things. First of all, you know, there's this idea that, oh, okay, if I do my work, I've done it, it's done, I never have to do it again, which is ridiculous, you know. making these big shifts in perspective, in one's identity, in one's image, is such a it's a lifelong practice. You know?
Yeah.
It's a lifelong practice. It's like, oh, okay, there's still this voice in my head that wants to pull me to the trouble side. And it takes practice to you know, say thank you, and I'm going to focus over here on the treasure, you know, time and time again.
Yeah.
What the thing about that, you know, that I think that's really important to name is that there's a way, in my point of view, this is my perspective that I offer anyway. There's a way that the fact that there is nothing, you set it and forget it in the human operating system. I think there's a way that keeps us, this isn't quite the right language, but I think it keeps us honest and it allows us to be also have some humility and a whole lot of empathy for the people that we get to work with, you know, because I would assert we all have. You know, we all have our version of that. You know, we all have our version of, if we're honest, we all have that, our version of that. So
yeah,
it's beautiful. Thanks.
I think for me, just what I want to mention, and I'm not like we didn't plan this, but then again, now you see this older man.
I see that.
This boy.
So Howie, for those who are listening, Howie's pointing to his, and by the way, we encourage you to click on the Life Song link in the intro notes for today's show. But he's pointing to the logo on his shirt, which has an adult and a child on it. Keep going, keep going.
Yeah. So I don't think whether we fully arrive. Like, let's say, if it's healing from trauma, if it's healing from, let's say, the struggles that we have as men. We don't fully arrive. And I think for me, when I met you and you were talking to us about your inner child, I was like, what's this guy talking about? Does this guy know that he's taking us to a very troublesome place? like I don't want to go there anymore. I want to forget. I don't want to forget about my childhood. But then again, now I remembered that, by the way, by now, embracing my inner child, that 13-year-old boy, So these days I play a lot. I call him, oh, come along. Let's have a conversation. Like, what will you want me to, like, what will you choose in this situation? And then it's a very beautiful place to be at, because I think our childlike, when we were like childlike, it's very simple. It's very easy to be very honest with ourselves. But this guy, this older guy, does not want to be like very honest with himself. And so it's very easy for this guy to find like, what am I good at? Something that's very, very, very simple that I'm very good at. While this guy is looking at, what do I lack? Most of the time, what do I like? What do I lack? Yeah, but this guy is looking at, what do I have? So it's very funny, because this guy was just thinking about writing stories. This guy is looking at, I didn't go to college. Yeah, so I think for me, when you are able to embrace our inner child, then we are able now to like to fully come alive despite our challenges and our struggles. We are like, you know what? There's one thing that I'm very good at, and I'm going to focus on that thing. And then now I'm going to bring my 100% to the world, because I think the world needs 100% of us. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
beautiful.
thank you to just like pointing me and us to just that, your inner child.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Howie.
Yeah.
Beautiful. We're going to wrap up here, and I think I was going to ask you to give us a piece of wisdom as we wrap up. I think, and you just did a beautiful job with that without me even asking. You know,
Yeah.
being in that piece about being in conscious relationship with the inner child. And I love the way you pointed out, you know, he's not thinking about what he's not thinking about the troubles, you know. He's thinking about that he really is focused on the treasures and the possibilities of what he brings to the world and what he can bring to the world. So
Yeah.
and you are bringing absolutely beautiful work to the world. And I we could go on for another hour, and we're gonna wrap up. We're going to wrap up here. So again, and I'll remind you all of this in the outro for today's show, but check the links. And if I may say so, if I'll put this in here as well, is you can make a donation to Lifesong Kenya through the link that's listed in the notes for both Act One and Act Two, and I encourage you to do so regularly and generously. This is absolutely beautiful work that Howie is doing with Lifesong Kenya with these young boys. And fund it, people. Howie, it's been a pleasure to spend this time with you. An absolute delight, and thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you spending time with me.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for joining me, Ken Mossman, your host here on Mojo for the Modern Man, and of course, my extraordinary guest who's doing brilliant work out in the world, Howie James Oma. And I encourage you to go by Howie's website, Lifesong Kenya. There are links in the intro notes for today's show and, of course, Act One. And don't just visit, as I said in the outro of Act One, don't just visit, go by and make a donation. His work is wildly, wildly important and so needed. And yeah, shell out a few bucks and share the love for a man who's doing extraordinary work. And of course, for the people who are receiving the extraordinary work, the boys who are receiving the gift of this extraordinary work that he is doing out in the world, and really pushing against a lot of forces that do not conspire to, shall we say, help. So the more support you can give to his work, the better. Next week, I will be joined by podcaster, entrepreneur, and a man with a great story to tell who's done a lot of different things, everything from becoming a first responder, well, being a first responder to real estate, podcasting, as I mentioned, a whole lot more. He's got a great story. Josh Wilson. Quick reminder, if you have not yet, subscribe to Mojo for the Modern Man, wherever you get your podcasts, and absolutely come by my website, kenmossman.com. We'll get you there. There's a free giveaway that I have that you can sign up for. You'll receive a recording about working with control, some insight on five reasons why we reach for control, and three very potent antidotes for control. Shout out of thanks to Carly Farrar and Megan Johnson at Knack and Company for their help. And of course, to Josh Hines, the sound editor and musician extraordinaire here on Mojo for the Modern Man. Could not do it without those three. With that, be well, take care, and we'll see you back here soon on Mojo for the Modern Man.